Hi, everyone. This is Thomas Stone, Terminal Economics. I wanted to put out this podcast. Don't really have anything earth-shattering to tell you that probably I haven't already communicated on the comments blog and the posts and the prior posts. And I have not posted anything in probably 3 weeks. So this is why I wanted to reach out to you. Obviously, wish you a happy new year and hope you had a good holiday and had a good Christmas and so forth. But, you know, really sometimes I get demoralized when I try to put out some certain things and try to communicate my research and findings and as an economist, because I think it most of it, just about all of it, gets drowned out. There are so many people now, prognosticators and people who seem to be experts in every realm, basically with a lot of followers and a lot of subscribers and a lot of noise. But at the end of the day, there really isn't a lot of people out there that I could rely on in terms of having cogent research. They're slanted one way or the other. And what do I mean slanted? Well, a lot of the economists in the alt media or so-called economists have this preconceived notion that there's going to be a collapse around every corner, or that this can't be maintained, or that can't be maintained, or they can't continue doing this forever. And so they tend to find verification of that. They look to the evidence to find that, and they will report on that. There are a lot of so-called research analysts and real estate experts and who continue to drum the beat regarding that the real estate markets can't be maintained, this can't be maintained, that can't be maintained, real estate values are going to fall right now, or they're going to get ready to fall. And there are a few of these so-called for some reason, I understand why. The mainstream media will pick them up and has to go to Cassandra's for the real estate bubble. I told you for a long time now that QE, the implementation of QE, is essentially a new financial system. No longer do the powers that be really have to be concerned about sovereign debt levels. They will come out in proffer controlled arguments about, you know, how this can't be maintained or that can't be maintained, and the government can't keep spending at these levels. But I submit to you that they can. It seems to be going so far so good. We're going now solid 16 years of quantitative easing. And yes, we're maybe in a quantitative tightening phase, but behind the scenes, quantitative easing is still in force. And how can QE be in force when the Federal Reserve, for instance, is unwinding its balance sheet? Well, the Federal Reserve can continue quantitative easing in many of its manifold ways because it essentially has now backstopped all of debt markets, all of the financial markets, all of the fixed income markets, and they have essentially overtaken the powers of the FDIC, for instance, and have already, by example, have backed all the bank accounts that of the failed banks. Anybody above $250,000. Which was the FDIC insurable limit. Everybody got their money back dollar for dollar. Even if you had tens of millions of dollars in a bank account and the bank subsequently failed, the Federal Reserve made it whole. You had all your money. And of course, the Federal Reserve injected the money into the failed bank. And where did they get the money from? Well, they got the money from the U.S. Treasury. And so the U.S. Treasury borrowed the money from the Fed and made the bank whole. And this was all done through quantitative easing. And because the banks, because the central banks no longer have to be concerned about relying on organic demand for treasury debt or sovereign debt around the world, whether it be in Japan or the European Union or such. They could basically generate as much debt as they want. And that's what we see, that's what we have, and that's going to continue. So on the surface, we do see quantitative tightening, but the Federal Reserve has ways of facilitating the debt and financial and monetary markets to the extent that we see now. And what do we see now? Well, we see ever-rising stock prices. We see real estate prices. I'm not talking about commercial properties that are dealing with what I would say unique situations in their markets, obviously, with a lack of demand. But in the residential real estate market, especially what I would consider the bread and butter of the real estate would be single-family houses, especially when you talk about townhomes, single-family detached, and condominiums as well. We see a lot of continued escalation in the prices. And why? Because behind the scenes, the Federal Reserve is still extremely dovish. And the fact that it's cutting federal funds rates, it's cut it down. I think the base rate is now 4.25%, so it's between 4.25% and 4.5%. I estimate it. I've been saying to you, to my few followers and few readers who are interested in my economic research, as that I am a trained economist, going back to over 30 years since I left grad school. I've been telling you that I estimate the neutral rate to be at least 4%, probably 4.25%. So the Fed is already at neutral policy. Now you may say, "Oh, Chris, no, heck no. Interest rates are still above the CPI and such." But what I say to you is, what's the ultimate barometer? How do we know that conditions are still dovish? Well, they're dovish because I continue to look at the stock market. They continue to move higher. I continue to look at real estate prices. They continue to move higher. And the bond market also knows that the Federal Reserve is being dovish as well. Well, how is that? Well, what have we observed in the wake of the beginning of the cuts of the federal funds rate? The federal funds rate now has come down, I guess, 100 basis points. And in so doing, since the initial cut in the federal funds rate by the Federal Reserve in this cycle, the 10-year Treasury has gone up about 100 basis points. And so those bond bulls who are expecting a bond rally and hopped onto the wagon for longer dated yields to fall and take advantage of that capital appreciation have been disappointed. And we, the people are calling them these bond vigilantes, but it doesn't have to be a bond vigilante. It doesn't take rocket science. It just takes some intermediate macroeconomics to understand that when we have the most appropriate conditions in terms of government spending and injections of social deficit spending, and not just the spending, but the massive trillions of dollars in additional treasury securities that are then used to leverage out balance sheets and buy other securities with them, then we realize that the conditions are very dovish, and that's what we're seeing, and that's why, despite mortgage rates now at 7%, real estate prices keep going higher. And since a lot of this social spending, this deficit, fiscal deficit spending, is directed towards internal use inside the borders of the United States, we're still seeing conditions ripe for elevated price inflation. And so the bond market is telling us that the Federal Reserve is actually dovish right now. It's not neutral, it's dovish. Now people could say, "Well, Chris, the federal funds rate is 4.25% and the CPI is 2.7%. And so it's tight." No, it's not tight, because if it were tight, the longer dated yields would begin to fall. But the longer dated yields are rising. And my concern here going into 2025 and further out during Trump's presidency is that you could see what I would consider, now people call it, what, a black swan event. You could see a black swan event where you see mortgage rates pierce 8, 9, and approach 10% in some catastrophic blow-off. And if that happens, I can't say that the markets will crash. I can't say that real estate will collapse. And reason why is we have to understand, in a linear environment, in a two-dimensional reality, I would say, oh my gosh, the market's going to collapse. But we have to take a step back if what I think happens is going to happen and we see a catastrophic blow-off in the longer-dated bond yields around the world, but especially here in the United States. We have to ask ourselves, what are the catalysts? And I submit to you, it would be a collapse, or I'm not saying collapse. I hate the word collapse. It would be a growing consensus opinion in the loss of confidence in the United States government and the central banking system, especially with the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve seems to be flipping a coin 50 times, and it seems to be coming up the wrong way. Every action they've been making in the wake of the COVID stimulus back in March and April of 2020, so now we're almost 5 years, they seem to be making the wrong decision on everything. They waited too long to raise interest rates. Inflation got wildly out of control. Then they started raising rates in a wild attempt. And so they created massive distortions in the debt markets. And so what happened was is that they had all of the, so many of these banks and the broker dealers and places like in legitimate establishments like Charles Schwab were showing up with such massive unrealized losses on their balance sheets that the Federal Reserve needed to step in even while they were raising interest rates and effectively guarantee all of the debt on these balance sheets of these large broker dealers and the large banks. And so by not having to market their bond portfolio, these places like J.P. Morgan, and Goldman Sachs, and especially Charles Schwab, which I know had been hurting, their stock took a big tumble a couple of years ago. They didn't have to worry about going out of business. They didn't have to worry about going the way of Lehman. They didn't have to worry about going the way of establishments like Merrill Lynch and all of the other establishments that ended up going out of business or getting bought up in consolidation in the wake of the 2008 collapse. And so while the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates in the back and unwinding some of its balance sheet in the back door, it's effectively as dovish as it could possibly be. I cannot think of a more dovish action in the history of the central banking system than effectively negating the requirement to mark to market bond portfolios and fixed income securities on the balance sheets of these large institutions. And so they're still doing it, but because they have that safety net, we don't have to worry about collapses. Now, the federal government and the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Treasury as well, allowed a few small banks, you know, as prime examples, as reasons why they needed to implement these things, because people were getting scared about these Bank of California and a few other small and mid-sized banks went belly up with oversized commercial loans and such. They use them as their reason to implement what they've implemented. So even though on the surface they are supposedly trying to look hawkish and trying to rein in inflation, on the backside, in the back door, behind the scenes, in the factory, they still remain massively dovish. But because of the Federal Reserve's insistence on effectively having the institutions avoid marking to market their debt securities while the entire yield curve explodes since 2022, is the most dovish I could possibly imagine the Federal Reserve being. And so you add to that the massive amount of the many trillions of dollars in additional treasury securities that are now floating around on the balance sheets of these private equity firms and the institutions and such, who are now buying up and bidding up sports teams, businesses, stocks, you name it. They're buying up everything. They're buying up all of the single-family detached housing stock. And I know this firsthand because I see these institutions going out to places like even in Winchester, Virginia, which are kind of secondary markets. They're buying up stock because I see who's taking title, and it's some of these nebulous LLCs. And so I say to myself, why? This is all because of the Federal Reserve and obviously working with the U.S. Treasury. I cannot think of a more accommodative monetary policy right now than what the Federal Reserve is engaging in right now, cutting interest rates and slowing down its balance sheet wind down, because it's telling everybody, well, don't worry about going belly up on the debt securities, we'll make it whole. Don't worry about going belly up and with the banks. The banks won't have to go belly up with losses on their balance sheet and their capital requirements, because don't worry, we'll make all of your depositors' deposits whole. Don't worry about it. The FDIC is now just like a useless appendage. It's like the appendix of the federal government. It's now everything's being channeled and run through the Federal Reserve. And so what I'm telling you is that this is what we're seeing. This is why the stock market's going insane. This is why real estate prices keep going higher. And the ironic twist here is that as interest rates, well, bond yields, as they move higher, ironically, we can continue to see asset prices rise, even though in classic economics and classic financial analysis and corporate finance, you can run the spreadsheets and you know you're using your discount rates and your weighted average costs of capital. It would on the surface in a linear environment, the prices of assets would fall. But I submit to you that bond yields are moving higher here because they're people are coming to, I'm talking about investors and traders, but I'm talking about investors. I'm not talking about these bond vigilantes. It's just the people are more and more people like you and me and other investors out there, especially larger ones, are coming more and more to the conclusion that they're losing confidence in the ability of the central banking system, the national central banking system, working with the individual governments. And so if that's the case, then we could see an 8-10% mortgage and house prices could continue to move higher. We need to keep these scenarios in our mind. And so, you know, I don't see anyone out here discussing these ideas. They're basically either stuck in the Trump, they're very pro-Trump, they're very pro whatever it is. Most of them are quoting Zero Hedge, and they parrot off of this. My research is completely independent of everything. And so I submit to you, if you're out there owning stocks, yeah, you know, hey, you know, they could take a tumble. Hey, we could see S&P 5000. But if someone told me 5 years ago we'd see S&P 5000, I'd say, you know, maybe another 8 or 9 years. But it's The way it is now, I would not want to be a holder of cash. And I've told you, I've been taking money out of my money market funds and paying down some high interest rate mortgages on my loans, on some of my mortgages. But I'm not selling any of my real estate. I've engaged in some activities for tax swaps, and I've expanded my balance sheet and expanded my the amount of my real estate holdings and expand out my cash flow, because I only see one way for rents to continue moving, and that's up. And it's amazing how much the rents continue to move higher, and that don't see anything changing at this point. And so here's just an economic summary to start the new year. And unless the government, what's going to turn it around? The government needs to stop spending. If the government continues to spend and continues to accumulate as much debt as it's accumulating and generating all of these treasury securities, there's only one way for the prices and one way for inflation to continue moving, and that's upward. It may become more muted as we plateau here, but at the end of the day, I don't see anything that it's going to turn this around. And the whole irony is the Federal Reserve is trying to lose interest, is trying to lower interest rates in a desperate attempt to lower the cost of the weighted average cost of capital of the federal government. But the problem is that the more that it lowers the interest rates, the more that the higher that the other end of the yield curve. So we're truly now getting a positively sloped yield curve for the first time in quite some time. And it unfortunately is coming because the longer dated yields are continuing to rise here. And the pressure on the yield curve from the 7, the 10, out to the 10, 20s and 30s in duration is up. The pressure on yields is up, meaning that the bond prices are continuing to fall. I don't see any other way around it. I do see a 10-year yield at 5%, and I think this during 2025, you're going to see the 10-year yield just blow above 5%, and people are going to be mystified. They're going to be like a deer in headlights, and you're just going to see that, and it's unfortunate, and you're going to see mortgage rates continue to rise. I don't think they're going to, the consensus is people think that they're going to taper off or move lower. The real estate economists and the fixed income security analysts, they're all saying that they submit to you, they're going to see a mortgage rate of around 5.5% to 6% by the end of the year. I don't think that's happening. I think it's going to be solid 7+. And that's unfortunate for a lot of people. But the institutions are going to be able to pass along the higher cost of their capital through higher rents. And they're going to be able to pass along the higher inflation will weed out a lot of these weaker corporations, and they will be able to, like the Walmarts and the Amazons, will be able to continue to consolidate their power over each economic sector, each business sector in the economy here in the United States and around the world. I just don't see anything changing. The only thing that can change it is for the U.S. Treasury and the United States government to get religion. But I think that's too far gone. I think they now devote too much interest. Too much of their budget now is going to interest expenses. And all of that interest expense is being dished out into the economy, and those with these assets are cleaning up with all of this massive amount of interest income that did not exist pre-COVID. You're talking probably close to another $800 or $900 billion on a run rate from the low from last mid-decade. So you're talking quite a bit of interest income, and that gooses the markets, that gooses asset prices, and I don't see any way around it. So that's about it. I have other things to talk about. I'll probably devote it to another podcast, but I just wanted to reach out to you, wish you a happy new year, and I don't see any collapses, anything like that happening, unless there's some sort of prepackaged event like COVID, or anything else. The Federal Reserve could pull a rabbit out of their hat like they did in the second half of 2019 and cause the markets to swoon and scare the crap out of the people and then start accumulating assets again, which even if that on the surface lowers bond yields and lowers the Fed funds rate, it's in a world of quantitative easing where the Federal Reserve can effectively back everything. Asset prices, with respect to asset prices, it's heads you win, tails you don't lose. And so I can't think of a better place to be in than with respect to assets still at this point. All right, any questions, just shoot me an email. Until next time, Thomas Stone out.